Hello, I'm Ellen Bintz. Welcome to Impact, a podcast about how we can each bring about real change in the world and getting practical in making that happen.
And hello, I'm Clive Johnson. A special welcome if you're listening for the first time. And a big thank you to our new subscribers. Each week, we look at one aspect of how we can connect our hearts to offer healing for others with our collective intention, prayers, and meditation, and talk about the critical happenings in our world that need our attention right now, some of which may not be making the headlines where you are.
So let's take a look at what we've picked up from the news this week and see where we might hone in with our prayers and intentions. As we record, it's March 21st, 2024.
So one website that we look at quite a lot, we've mentioned before, is Genocide Watch. A lot of very, very valuable reports on there about the potential for genocide and where genocide is actually seen to be happening at the moment. And we picked up this week a report there that many young and middle-aged people in Myanmar fear that they will be forced to fight their own people and commit atrocities against them, following an announcement by the ruling military junta last month that a mandatory conscription law will come into force from mid-April. Under the 2010 People's Military Service Law, men aged 18 up to 35 will be conscripted for up to 5 years in what the junta says is an emergency situation. Women will not be conscripted just at the moment, but aren't excluded from the law. The military is facing armed opposition to its rule and has also recently suffered large losses on the battlefield, including the surrender of entire battalions. And this is an example of a situation many of us might be able to relate to. Even I was thinking about this earlier, even if I've never had to serve in the military. I came in that generation a decade later, I think, in the UK than mandatory conscription, and certainly not into a situation where you will be sent to the front line. And having heard stories related to me, personal stories, for example, in Israel and Palestine, of people in that very situation, very young men and women called up, and in some cases, seeing many of their friends, their peers killed, and being in such a dangerous situation. It is just horrendous to imagine what that would be like. This seems one of those situations where even if we've not been there, I was careful about using the word empathy, because I think to some extent, if you've never been there, you can never fully tune in. But we probably can get quite some way to having a sense of what it must be to be in this situation.
So am I to understand that they're being called up because there is conflict within the country, that there's opposition to the ruling force? So the ruling force is calling these people to defend the ruling force.
That's right. That's right. There has been an opposition ever since the junta came to power, but it's gone through different phases of organizing itself, different groups coming together. And particularly around the fringes of Myanmar, I think the western fringes and northern fringes, there has been conflict. There has been actual exchange of fire going on, and there have been entire sections of the army essentially deserting, as the junta would see it. Mm-hmm. And of course, those being conscripted are in many cases not loyal to the junta, the ruling authorities, and they fear that they will be ordered to attack their own families, their own friends, their own communities, and lots of stories of abuse and all sorts of things that tend to go on in these war zones as well. Really terrifying prospect.
Wow.
But Myanmar, I think we do need a briefing on, don't we, really, before?
I'm
a bit out of touch with what's happening.
I'm not sure I understand everything that's happening.
No, and it's not just the Rohingya either. You know, we tend to talk about the Rohingya as the persecuted minority there, but there are others as well. So that, again, is is wrapped up with this, really.
Well, over to China, not that far away, a massive explosion at a shop selling fried chicken in the town of Yangyo in northern China last Wednesday left 7 people dead and 27 injured. Some of the injured were quickly discharged from the hospital, and the ensuing blaze was quickly brought under control. And initial indications suggest that the blast was caused by a gas leak. A gas explosion at a barbecue restaurant last year prompted Xi Jinping to order a major overhaul of safety arrangements across the country. Infrastructure problems, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And but bringing, I guess, some tighter regulation probably around safety, safety checks and so on. Yeah, so this is going to really highlight the need to move that on quickly, I guess. And we were talking about the Rohingya just now. In its annual appeal, or an annual appeal, the United Nations has appealed for more than $800 million to provide food, shelter, healthcare, access to drinking water, protection services, education, and other forms of aid to the mainly Muslim Rohingya refugees and their hosts living in camps in Bangladesh. In a statement made last Wednesday, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, said that about 95% of what is more than 1 million Rohingya refugees currently camping in Bangladesh are reliant on humanitarian support. Adding to the horror, as the ruling junta in Myanmar prevents any hope of the people returning to their homeland in the foreseeable future, abuse and gender-based violence are being faced by many women and children in the camps. Some who sought to escape conditions in the camps have resorted to making dangerous and what have proved to be often deadly boat journeys, trying to reach other Muslim majority countries such as Malaysia and Indonesia. And of course, with world attention focused on other trouble spots, the UN has appealed for its member nations not to neglect the desperate humanitarian needs of the Rohingya people.
95% of the people depend on humanitarian aid.
Yeah, and they've been there for many years now. Well, at least 2 years. 2021, I think, was the time the junta came in. So yes, this is several years for some of them.
So thankfully, the UN is paying attention to this and bringing it to our attention. Well, Russians went to the polls this weekend in a presidential election that saw Vladimir Putin return to power for a fifth term and a further 6 years in what some judge to be a rigged polling. Putin won 87% of the vote. Nonetheless, some Russians refused to engage in the political process, with around 25% staying away from the vote, while some launched protest votes at a polling station at noon on Sunday, remembering the sudden death of opposition leader Alexei Navalny in a Siberian prison last month. The election comes at a time that Western spy chiefs say is a crossroads for the Ukraine war and the wider West, as U.S. domestic politics may threaten support for Ukraine and as Russian land forces have made territorial gains following a failed Ukrainian counteroffensive last year. Ukraine was due to go to the polls this month, but has suspended elections while it remains in a state of martial law. So I don't think there are any big surprises here.
No, this was never really questioned, was it, that there would be this massive voter popularity for the Russian president, or so it said. Who
I
are
think
we?
it was courageous for the protesters.
Yes, very much so, very much so. And I think another interesting aspect of this particular story, again, is what seems to be coming out from the intelligence agencies, this real fear that the tide is potentially turning against Ukraine on land. As I think we mentioned before, they've done very well in the sea, in the Black Sea. But yeah, it's a very delicate time in that war. And And a water-related story. As we record on the 21st of March, we're one day away from World Water Day. Reminder that the focus of global healing response this quarter is how we respond to water, using it, the peace issues around it, having access to clean drinking water. And we'll put the link in the show notes both to World Water Day, which is going to be on the 22nd of March. And well, by the time this podcast launches, which probably will be that day, may have passed, and also to the Global Healing Response page that's very much focused on that. So, reported by AP News this week, Bengaluru, which is also known as Bangalore, one of the fastest growing cities in southern India and indeed in the world, is rapidly running out of water following unusually hot months and low rainfall in recent years, with expected hotter months to follow. The cost of water has skyrocketed, especially impacting the poor. City and state government authorities are trying to keep control of the situation, implementing emergency measures such as nationalizing water tankers and capping water costs. Infrastructure in this very fast-growing city for fresh water supply hasn't kept up with the quickly growing population. The population that now in the greater Bengaluru area exceeds 24 million people, according to data research company Statista. Groundwater is relied upon as a source of water by more than a third of the central urban population of 10 million and is fast running out, while around half of the bore wells drilled in the city have already run dry. El Nino, this is the warming of the ocean surfaces that affects climate patterns worldwide, along with lower than average rainfall in recent years, mean that groundwater levels remain low. And infrastructure projects such as a major piping project to supply water from a river some miles outside the city haven't been completed. Estimates by the national government that more than 40% of Bengaluru residents won't have access to drinking water by the end of the decade, while few still have a regular supply. Shashank Palluar, a Bengaluru-based hydrologist, says that rather than drill more boreholes, as is currently happening, the city should instead focus on refilling the 200 or more lakes spread across the city, stop new construction in lake areas, encourage rainwater harvesting, and increase green cover across the city. Sounds like sensible advice to me.
Yes, it certainly does. Here's a story that is disturbing, but also I am encouraged by the steps that they're taking to solve it. Two UN agencies, UNICEF and the UN Population Fund, which is the UNFPA, are stepping up efforts to halt the illegal practice in which girls are promised as a wife to older men in the south of Madagascar, sometimes even before they're born. The agencies are offering education for men to help them understand the types of violence which are perpetrated against women and girls. Very poor families often agree to exchange an unborn girl child for a zebu cow, which is very important in the culture as a sign of wealth and respectability. Girls who refuse the husbands chosen for them, with some being expected to marry at 13, are often disowned by their families, who see this as shameful. Cases of girls committing suicide have been reported. Ending the practice is reliant on educating and persuading men to abandon the traditional practice. I wholly agree with this. In any domestic violence situation or whatever, we need to educate the men to know what they're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a major shift needed, isn't there? And clearly this is culturally rooted. It's seen as traditional. It's passed down and understood to be acceptable. And unless there's education, how can people ever begin to turn around from this? Quite scary that it's still going on at such a to such an extent as well, I think. Well, to any extent, that this is still so rooted in that culture.
So good for UNICEF and the UNFPA, thank you for your work.
Absolutely. And some good news, we need that, don't we, from Europe.
Yes.
Several Euro I was really quite surprised, pleasantly surprised when I read this story. Several European countries have already hit some of their sustainable energy targets. These are the COP targets for 2030, almost 10 years early.
Wow.
This is what a study by Polish economists published last week revealed, although there are big gaps. All European Union member states made progress in the last decade towards achieving the seventh of what are 17 Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, which the UN has declared, which calls for access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, and modern energy for all by 2030. The study observes systematic progress towards EU countries reaching this particular target. The SDGs are targets or indicators agreed by UN member states for framing their political agendas over a 15-year period that started back in 2015. And using some indicators, some countries had already reached their targets by 2021, according to this new study. Sweden was closest to the overall goal, followed by Denmark, Estonia, and Austria. Malta had improved the most, and there were also big gains seen in Cyprus, Latvia, and Belgium. Several countries had already achieved their targets for 2030 in at least one of the indicators by 2021. Spain, Malta, and Portugal hit the 2030 target for the average amount of energy a person consumes in a household. Denmark, Ireland, and Luxembourg hit the target for energy productivity, which compares the size of an economy with the energy it consumes, while Sweden, Finland, and Latvia beat the target of getting 40% of their final energy consumption from renewables. Wow.
Wow, this is impressive.
It is. It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's showing us it can be done.
Exactly. Yes.
Not, I don't want to just hear these statistics. I would love to know what they're doing and, the processes they're going through to make this happen. We can all benefit from that.
And sizable countries as well, like Spain, really, really making progress.
And I'm interested by the requirements that it has to be modern energy. So I'm assuming that means like electric vehicles and solar energy and things like that.
Yes, I don't think the targets and indicators that lie behind each of these SDGs are necessarily that specific. I think it's generally assumed that it's understood what they meant, but I don't know the detail. And clearly, there's got to be pretty sophisticated methodology, I would guess, for assessing progress. Yeah, so definitely some learnings there, perhaps, yeah.
Yes. So down to Africa, in northern Nigeria's Kaduna state, gunmen abducted 87 villagers on Sunday. Some 75 people were abducted from other nearby villages over the past week also. And as we reported last week, kidnappings are occurring at an alarming rate, with the latest village to have been targeted now having been attacked 5 times. So, kidnappers, as we reported, usually seek to secure ransom payments, which it is both illegal to pay, and most families of those taken just cannot afford.
Definitely, we should not be taking our eye off of this terrible situation. Really becoming almost endemic, isn't it, in Nigeria?
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking on the CBS program, Face the Nation, this last Sunday, the UN Children's Agency UNICEF head, Catherine Russell, said, here's another country that we're not taking our eyes off. The situation in Haiti is the worst that anyone has seen in decades, which is quite a statement given what a terrible state it's been in for so many years. She said many, many people there are suffering from serious hunger and malnutrition, and we're not able to get enough aid to them. As we mentioned, gangs control large parts of the capital, Port-au-Prince, and elsewhere. As the US arranged a charter flight to enable its citizens to flee, and aid workers are either leaving their posts or have been kidnapped, the difficulty of sustaining aid was highlighted on last Saturday when gangs looted a UNICEF shipment carrying crucial supplies for maternal, neonatal, and child health intended to provide relief for suffering mothers and children. The UN warned that the country is virtually at breaking point in its ability to provide even the most basic services.
Oh, I didn't think it could get worse.
No. I mean, this looting of, for what purpose? It just is just beyond.
Yes. And a reminder that you did a deep dive into Haiti. If our listeners would like to learn more, they can go back and listen to that episode that you did.
It was a big learning for me as well.
Understand.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, so UNICEF also warned last Friday of the potential catastrophic loss of lives in Sudan to starvation as the civil war worsens, calling for a massive mobilization of resources. And as we've reported, Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, has been fighting Sudan's army for control of the country in a war that has killed thousands, displaced millions of people, and left millions vulnerable to starvation. UNICEF previously warned that up to 3.7 million children are estimated to be acutely malnourished this year in Sudan, including 730,000 who need life-saving treatment. The UN warned last week that around 5 million people in the country now face starvation. The United Nations Secretary Antonio Guterres urging the Security Council to take urgent action.
But the numbers of people facing starvation in Sudan is just unbelievably high, isn't it? It's
3.7
multiples.
Million children.
Yes.
Malnourished.
Yes. And in South Sudan, the East African newspaper reports that hope for peace talks are in doubt as some armed groups mistrust Kenya President William Ruto, who has offered to mediate peace talks in Nairobi. One of the groups holding out against the South Sudan government, the National Salvation Front, or NAS, further distrusts the motives for the talks, believing them to be part of a campaign to encourage their members to defect. However, others, including the South Sudan United Front and Real SPLM, have shown willingness to participate in the negotiations.
That sounds dicey.
Yeah, there have been negotiations going on in, it was in, I want to say Croatia, I don't think it was Croatia, it might have been Montenegro in the Balkans, and they were going very slowly, and the Kenyan president had stepped up to the mark, as I understood it, to offer to help, and it's closer ground as well kind of thing. But clearly this is an issue for any peace talk to work, for people to come to the table, there has to be trust in the mediator, or a level of trust at least, and not suspicion. So that's certainly one that needs to be resolved.
So our general reflections on these stories, we send love for all who are grieving those killed in the chicken shop explosion in China last week, and that they be comforted, bathed in light, and know the blessed strength of serenity. We remember, too, those who fear being called up in Myanmar into an army whose atrocities they despise, willing that they have great comfort, courage, and protection as they await conscription and after. We will, that following Vladimir Putin's confirmation as president for a new term, all Russians will be moved to act fairly and without personal bias toward those who declare different political views to their own. Let us focus our attention for the hearts and minds of all needed to allow peace talks concerning South Sudan to receive the reassurance they need to accept mediation now being offered by Kenyan President William Ruto, and for the authorities determining policy and investment in Bengaluru relating to water supply will have wisdom to know best where to direct resources and strategy in order to maximize supply of water to all of the city's population. And let us also will that the security forces seeking to locate and return the 87 villagers kidnapped in Kaduna this Sunday will be guided in their actions to know where to search and how to effect the safe and immediate return of these and all other hostages taken in their country. And finally, for this episode, we will that the governments of all nations of the G7 and all other wealthy nations will be moved by compassion for the starving and desperate Rohingya in Bangladesh and the millions in Sudan in agreeing their contributions to international aid. And while not specifically mentioned by us this week, of course, we continue to hold those facing starvation in Gaza, willing that all countries and organizations who are seeking to bring food and aid to the enclave can do so.
And finally, a good news story to end with. To encourage Muslims to be more mindful of the impact of Ramadan on the environment, many mosques are discouraging the use of single-use items, and some have decided to ban the use of plastics altogether. The communal experience of iftars, these are the after-sunset meals that bring communities together during this time of fasting, have often used utensils designed for mass catering, such as plastic knives and forks and bottles of water. A move to ban plastics, urged by the Muslim Council of Britain, is a way for Muslims to be mindful of God's creation and care for the environment, is just one example of where community-minded action is blossoming this Ramadan, which started, I think, earlier this week.
Yes, it did. I love this story. Thank you to the Muslim community for thinking of this.
Beautiful example, isn't it?
Yes. So, our suggested focus for intention is as UNICEF warns that approaching 4 million children are thought to suffer malnourishment in Sudan and millions of displaced people in the country face starvation, we suggest focusing our attention on this desperate humanitarian crisis in East Africa. We will that the world's news media and all governments will be moved with compassion to highlight and respond with deep humanity to the famine in Sudan.
That about wraps it up for this episode. Remember, you can connect with us in the Facebook group and for live intention holding in my daily Insight Timer offerings and with Ellen in the Labyrinth Activist Network's Zoom calls. Details of how to hook up with these are in our show notes. Look out too for our next special topic episode, which we'll be releasing in the next few days. Thank you for listening and for sharing with us in holding intentions. We look forward to connecting again next time. In the meantime, thank you, go well, stay safe.
And remember, we're more powerful together.
Impact is presented by Ellen Mintz and Clive Johnson and produced by Impact Productions. Our theme music is by Chris Collins, and our logo artwork is by Auto Classic. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or your favorite podcast provider. We're a non-commercial podcast dedicated to people of any faith tradition or none who yearn for healing in our troubled world. Please pass on the word so others may join us in making an impact. Thank you for listening.